class on Wednesday night but the singing. But I'll probably get very close to it. I may move along just so we can get done, and I may not. Depends on the conversation. But if you want to, go ahead and turn in your Bibles to the book of Job. Like I said, we're going to be finishing with that. And starting next Sunday morning, I think I'm teaching Sunday morning. I don't remember. Either Sunday morning or Wednesday night, we'll be starting Revelation. And we'll go for 6 months with Revelation. I'll be teaching that. I will have some booklets in the back. I'm presently copying those, and it's pretty thick. I'm trying to put some commentary in there as well with each of the set of questions. So hopefully Wednesday night I'll have those put in the back for y'all to take and start looking over as we're going to begin Revelation. But as I said, today we're going to finish with thinking like a Christian and kind of compare and contrast Job's friends with his thinking, and then maybe if we have time, get into some other areas and what we can learn from how to help somebody when they're going through difficulties in their lives. That doesn't have to do so much with thinking like a Christian, but I think it might be good to talk about since we're talking about Job. Before we begin this morning, I'm going to ask Bill Crawford, if he would, to lead us in a word of prayer.
Therefore, we thank you for the day, we thank you for this opportunity to study a portion of our word. Pray you'll be with us. So there it is, he expounds thy word to us. Pray that we'll examine our lives and we'll be more like your son. And pray that you'll go with us through the service and forgive us of any wrongs. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. All right. Job, beginning with the question four, while Job was going through his problems, we have recorded for us the way his quote-unquote friends thought. I want to use his friends' thinking as a means to compare and contrast to Job's thinking. And many times when our families or good friends are going through difficulties, their difficulties can and do impact our thinking. Especially if it's family and they're suffering very, very badly. What they go through, like I said, it has an impact on us and causes us to think. I'll give you an example. This past week, as most of you know, I kind of help with the girls' track team, the head girls' track coach, and Jamie is, I don't know, maybe in her late 40s, early 50s. She found out that she was having some problems, and she went in, and they found some spots on her lungs and stomach. And so they did some further tests, and on Monday they did a radioactive test. And I didn't know about this at all, but they put radioactive material into your body, and apparently the radioactive material will lock itself onto cancerous tumors. And they found some radioactive markers in her system. She had a biopsy on Friday morning, thinking that it's cancer. And this whole week has caused me to think about that a great deal. That everything was going fine for her. And within a week's time, you know, and it's kind of like I've been studying the book of Revelation, and Revelation does talk about the fact that a lot of times for countries and societies, and I think it can also relate to people, that bad things, the collapse of the Roman Empire, in the book of Revelation it says that it's going to happen in, and you remember the phrasing, anybody remember the phrasing is how quickly it was going to happen? One night, Revelation says. One day, the Roman Empire was going to just collapse. And you think about the terrible things that have happened in our country over the past several years. It happens really quickly, does it not? Everything's going fine. And then all of a sudden, within just a blink of an eye, boom, things go terrible. 9/11. I can still remember that day in March. It was a Friday, I believe it was. I think Adam was observing me that day. And the principal comes into us on that Friday morning and says, you need to make plans for the students to go home and not come back the rest of the year. have all the material copied. Told each teacher that, because they're taking the computers home and they're not going to be back because we're going to be shutting down the schools for at least 6 weeks. And we ended up for the whole year. Be prepared for the whole year. On Thursday, everything was fine. We were just moving along and having a, you know, I mean, it was like everything. I'd already had my lessons plans for the next week laid out. And then on Friday morning, it was just like that. The world changed. Literally. And this happens a lot of time. When things like this happen, it usually happens quickly. And what is it that we don't get to do when things like this happen overnight like that? What don't we get to do? We don't get to prepare ourselves. We don't get to think through it. I mean, today, think about your menu. Well, I don't know. Maybe different for y'all than it is for me. But for my, for our house, since Dina and I have been married, we plan our menu the next week, the week before. And we know exactly what we're going to eat. So we go to the store and drive into the services this morning. Dina and I were making the menu out for next week because we got to go this tonight or tomorrow night to get the groceries for this. Well, actually, this week. We were up at Nick and Katie's this past weekend, so we didn't have a chance to do that. So we're a week ahead with just the meals we're going to eat. We plan. We're kind of creatures of planning, are we not? We like to think through things. And when things happen, boom, like that, it causes our thinking to really be impacted to where we don't think. How quickly did all this happen to Job? How quickly did it happen to Job? One day. Just like we're, and as I was teaching this and preparing for this, I was thinking with Revelation, what John says in Revelation, actually it's Jesus, says in Revelation, one day, the Roman Empire is going to collapse. One day, everything happened to Job, and he didn't have really a lot of time to prepare and to think. And his friends, too, when it happens to a friend, you don't have time to prepare and think. So it impacts our thinking, and the more we love the individual that it happens to, the more that it impacts our thoughts. Can you sum up how his friends thought about Job's suffering, which is sometimes how we view our own sufferings? How did his friends view his sufferings before we get into individually looking at them?
He did something wrong.
He did something wrong. You deserved. And have we ever done that? What have I done to deserve this? What have I done to deserve this? What did I do to deserve this? I mean, you know, one of the first questions I asked Jamie whenever she told me that they found some spots on her lungs and stomach. Have you ever smoked? She was a long distance runner in college, high school and college. I got a full scholarship to Eastern Kentucky University to run, and even tried for the Olympics and fell a couple or three places short of she'd have been running in the Olympics. And I'm thinking, no way she ever smoked. So I asked her, did you ever smoke? Implying what? If she had smoked, what? It's what caused it. It's what you know, it's the result of that. And she never had. I didn't think she had. But sometimes we ask that, or we ask that kind of thing indirectly, as I did. And sometimes we think that our tough days, our problems, our suffering is a direct result of something we did. It's viewed like a punishment. And sometimes it is, and sometimes it's not. Bottom line is, though, are we ever going to know for sure? Not on this side. So why even bother asking that question? You know, why even bother asking it or being worried about that sort of thing? But that's what his friends thought. His friends thought, this is something that you deserve. So let's quickly, because I want to get to the next question, let's quickly go take a look at Eliphaz. Go over to Job chapter 4. We'll take a look at verses 7, 8, and 9. We could read all of these. I'm not going to take the time to read all of these, because I think we see his view for Job from this and the way he was thinking about all that Job was suffering. Remember now, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the upright ever caught off? Even if I have seen those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same, by the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of his anger they are consumed. How did he view Job's suffering?
If you were as innocent as you say you are, this wouldn't be happening to you.
Yeah, if you were as innocent as you say you are, this would not happen to us. And so I think we can say that Eliphaz sees me in a general sense. Eliphaz sees meaning in all people's experience. I misworded that there. And as an English teacher, that kind of really bothers me to see that I have made a mistake there. But he says, if you can fix that for me, Nate, as we go on. He says there, he sees that there's some meaning here. There's some reason as to why that he is going through this. And in this case, I think what he is saying to Job is that you deserve what you get. You deserve what you're getting. You know, that's a... that's looking, and was he, well, first of all, before I say what I'm going to say, was he right? Did Job deserve this at all? No, he did not deserve any of it. Now, we know that, but no one else knew that. And the only reason we know that is because, as I've already indicated, we see what happened in heaven before all of this took place. And so, you know, the rest of this chapter and the rest of the writing here is giving examples from his own life, Eliphaz's own life, of how he has seen this. And where is he getting his understanding from? Where is Eliphaz, whenever you take a look at the rest of the passage, he is looking at his own life and seeing the examples of his own life for this. Where is he getting his understanding from? Himself and not God. So his thinking is premised and based on whom? Man. It's not heavenly. It's not heavenly. And so when we are going through difficulties, we don't need to rely on man's thinking, but we need to rely on God's thinking, because sometimes what we see in life is incorrectly understood by us. All right? Any comments on that? Go over to chapter 8 and let's take a look at verses 8 through 10. And take a look at Bildad. As I said, I'm going to move a little faster, but if you have comments, please bring them out, because I want to get to question 5. And deal with that a little bit today. Bildad, chapter 8, 8 through 10. For inquire, please, of the former age, and consider the things discovered by their fathers. For we were born yesterday and know nothing, because our days on earth are a shadow. Will they not teach you and tell you in other words from their heart? How did Bildad view suffering based on these verses? It's different from Eliphaz. So how did Bildad view? What is it he's looking to get his answers? What is his thinking based on? What do you think?
Is it his ancestors?
Yeah. I believe he's looking to the past. He's looking to the past. In other words, tradition is the most important thing to build at. And he learns a lot from, and he is basing his thinking on tradition. And those of us who are older never have done that. Right? We never look back to the good old days. Have you ever heard that phrase before? This is the way it was when I was younger. Have you ever said that, those of us that are older? You know? Is there anything wrong with that, first of all? No. Maybe. I like that response. Why do you say that, Kevin?
Well, you got to be careful there. There's traditions and there's doctrine. And you got to, one, know the difference, and two, know, I mean, culture does change, both for good and for worse. You know, there are two things there. So you just, that's why it's amazing.
Yeah, and I can guarantee you that all of us, when we will look back to the good old days and we rely on the good old days, there's a lot of things that we believe and practice today that are based on the present. Is there not? If you grew up without air conditioning, you got air conditioning in your house?
I do.
Yeah, me too. If you grew up, I mean, I grew up, my dad didn't have any air conditioning in the vehicles. You know the first thing I look for whenever I buy a vehicle today? That's exactly right. I look, see if there's air conditioning in it. You know, the good old days were good old days. But at the same time, all of us change over the course of time. And we accept a lot, you know, in your home. I know growing up, when I was growing up, we had 3 television stations. We had a big old antenna outside our house, and we had 3 television stations.
Also like the toilet in the house, too.
Yeah, that, you know, okay. 3 television. How many those of us that remember those days and had those, how many television stations you got in your house today? You know, I got like, I don't know, 300, but I watch like 3. Kind of like from years past, you know. Although I do like all the extra sports stations, I do get to watch SEC Network. Yesterday I was watching all those television stations that I didn't have growing up. But at the same time, you know, we incorporate a lot of the present into our lives, and a lot of the present thinking too. My point. The past is good and we can learn from it. And as Kevin said, and, you know, and that's one of the points that we have, is that you do learn from it. And so tradition is, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying throw out tradition. But to bind that with folks is not good. It's wrong. Sometimes we want to stick to the way it always has been, and we need to realize that as we learn and grow, we will find our old way of thinking is wrong. After all, isn't this what we call about isn't that what Paul's talking about in Romans chapter 12 that we looked at? Transforming your minds. A lot of times the old way of thinking was wrong. And so we transform our minds. We change our minds to a new way of thinking. But Bildad, it is called growth. He stuck to the old way. Now I want to spend just a second or two with Zophar. Turn over to chapter 11. Zophar. I'm going to read several verses out of Zophar. Zophar is the last of the 3 friends to speak, and that usually indicates that he was probably also the youngest of the 3 friends of Job. Normally, those that were older spoke first, and then they would, as the next oldest, and the next, and then the last to speak was usually the youngest. How would you, if you've read, let's read verses 6 through 14. I got time. Let's read verses 6 through 14. And that he would show thee the secrets of wisdom, that thou art double to that which is. Know therefore that God exacteth of thee less than thine iniquity deserves. Canst thou by searching find out God? Canst thou find out the Almighty unto perfection? It is as high as heaven. What canst thou do deeper than hell? What canst thou know? The measure thereof is longer than the earth and broader than the sea. If he cut off and shut up or gather together, then he can. Who can hinder him? For he knoweth vain men. He seeth wickedness also. He will not then consider it. For vain man would be wise, though man be born like a wild donkey's colt. If thou prepare thine heart and stretch out thine hands toward him, if iniquity be in thy hand, put it far away, and let not the wickedness dwell in the tabernacles. You know, he has a very hard-hearted and harsh language that he uses against Job. Go back to verse 3 and you'll notice. He says to Job, should your empty talk make men hold their peace? And when you mock, should no one rebuke you? He says there, somebody needs to humble you, Job. Somebody needs to humble you. And then you go over to verses 11 and 12 that we've already read. He's basically telling Job, you're both worthless and stupid. You're both worthless and stupid. I don't think the young man ever took a class on how to influence people and win friends. So what can you say about Zophar and his way of thinking? What can you say about him and his way of thinking here?
He was very arrogant and self-centered.
Indeed he was, very arrogant and self-centered. What else?
Very critical.
Very critical.
He didn't look inward, he looked outward.
He didn't examine, that's good, he didn't examine himself first and then examine. Very good, others. Anyone else? Katie?
If you said he was the youngest, it kind of shows here. It's almost like he didn't know what to say, but he had to say something.
Okay, he didn't know, maybe he didn't know what to say, but he feels like he has to say something. We've never felt like that, right? We feel like we have to say something, and then usually, you know, I felt that way a lot of times, and usually whenever I say something later on, I think to myself, why did I say that? That's dumb. And sometimes it's best not to say anything at all, and we'll talk about that in just a few minutes. All right? Anyone else? What do you think about him in a way, what he had to say?
He was very direct, very blunt.
Very direct and very blunt. Sometimes that's called for. I mean, when Jesus was talking to the Pharisees, he called them a brood of vipers, white-walled and whitewashed vessels. Sometimes that's called for. But when he was talking to the woman in sin at the well, he used a different language, didn't he? A little bit more patient with them. A little bit more patient. And so you need to be able to understand the different times of when to speak and when not to speak. Very good. Anyone else?
I think it goes back to knowing your audience.
Okay. That's good. Yeah, it goes back to knowing your audience.
Also knowing the truth, because his assessment was totally false about God. You know, back then they believed if you, bad things happen to you, you must be not doing, living right, or doing the right things. Which is, we know it rains on the just and the unjust.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, it goes back to the principle of sour grapes in Ezekiel chapter 18. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think so. Very good. Anyone else? Who does he sound like today? Who does he sound like today? Maybe I'm thinking more of myself here than others. But he sounds like a lot sometimes, not all, but at times, young preachers, young people who have it all figured out. I know, I knew it all when I was younger. I knew it all. I knew all the answers whenever any question was asked. And I'm not going to tell you some of them, but there are a lot of times I spoke and I wish, and I've gone back and apologized to people, but I wish I would not have spoke because I said the wrong thing in the wrong way. And now as I'm older, I understand that. And as you get older, you start to experience things and you start to learn how to say things. You start to learn what not to say, and when you do have to say something, how to say it. And you learn, as Ryan pointed out, when to be direct and when not to be direct. And that's a skill. That's a skill. By making a lot of mistakes. And then doing self-examination. Zophar was a religious dogmatist, and he assumed to know everything about God and what God would do in any given case and why he would do it. In all of his thoughts. Although Zophar's assumption was wrong, he explained quite accurately that God knows and sees everything in verse 11. For he knows deceitful men, he sees wickedness, will he not then consider it? And so the point, one of the lessons we can learn here from Zophar, is that sometimes You can say the right thing in the wrong way. Yeah. Sometimes you can say the right thing in the wrong way. And we need to stop and to pray and to think before we speak in certain situations. Well, in all situations, but in specifically in certain situations. And I rushed through that, but I want to get to this next question. Any thoughts? Yeah, go ahead, Jim.
That last point you just made, something that we've been reading about and studying on, and I didn't really think of it this way, but it takes humility to listen.
Yeah.
Because you want to say something to somebody, and maybe you don't even like what they're saying to you, but part of us being Christians is learning to be a good listener. And that's something that I'm still working on and working towards. Because as soon as I hear someone say something that is contrary to what the Word of God is, I'm ready to step in and have an opinion.
Yeah.
Instead of just listening and maybe asking some more questions why that person came to that conclusion. So it doesn't build up the confrontation. And so, yeah, I think it's difficult to listen. And it was surprising to me to find out that it takes humility to listen.
Yeah. Yeah, and one of the things that my wife pointed out to me when I was younger, and it was a practice that was really hard to take, is that whenever I taught and somebody would ask a question, a lot of times I would stop looking and listening and start looking in my Bible. And whenever I did that, let's say as Jim was talking right there, and as soon as he started talking, I started to go like this. What does that indicate I've stopped doing with Jim? Listening. And that was hard for me to break that habit, because as a teacher, the teacher is supposed to have what always? All the answers. Well, that was what I thought. Now, remember I told you, when I was young, I had all the, I knew it all, but I was wrong on most of it. And you got to have all the answers. So as soon as a question is asked or a comment is made, and you know, I did do this. And Dina, she kept telling me, that looks so bad, you need to stop that. And finally, and there have been times when people are talking that I'm thinking, okay, I need to look that, where's that verse? And I know I got to pay attention. I got to listen to what's being said. I got to listen to the whole way through. And then I can do that. And if it takes a few seconds, it takes a few seconds. Okay, but that's a really, really good point, really valid point. Yeah, Carrie.
Another point you can take from this is you got to be careful when you're communicating, because words are powerful, and you can tear people down. Lucky Joe was strong in the faith, but imagine if that's a weak person in the faith, and I was telling you that.
Yeah.
How that might impact your faith.
Yeah, and even if you're strong in faith, telling you that, it can very easily impact the person.
Yeah.
Yeah, very good. Anyone else? Good comments.
Today's society, you're not wrong unless you don't agree with me.
Yeah.
When you don't agree with me, you're wrong.
Yeah.
They make their mind up just like that without knowing the fact.
Yeah, and in our society, that is exactly the way our society thinks, and as Kenneth pointed out, I think maybe if we're not careful, it can start seeping in to the Lord's church as well. And because everything that's in society does do what? To a lesser degree.
Influences and shapes us.
That's right. Influences and shapes us, because we're in that society. Good point. Kenneth? Kevin, I'm sorry.
But it also goes back to knowing an opinion and a doctrine.
Yes.
Because at least, and I'm just using from where I grew up, I mean, we had a lot of divisions over all opinions. And, I mean, when I say divisions, 20 people left, then another, I mean, it was just because of not understanding the difference in an opinion and doctrine. So if it's an opinion, it might be a strong one, but if it doesn't matter, you might need to let that go. And I know that's a challenge, because I've got a lot of thoughts. I want to like share things, and you know, I want to do. I want stuff to do. You know, like, why we got to do it that way? Well, but in reality, the majority of the things don't matter in the scheme of salvation, it's an opinion. And we get caught up with that sometimes, I think, as Christians, because there's so many false teaching and denominationalism and all that. We get caught up in too many labels and different stuff so much that we don't see the truth of what's being done. We're too busy with the label or the what the world says, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and that's exactly so far. That's exactly so far. Anyone else? Very good comments. Very good discussion. All right. So we saw all the bad things. Okay, the way not to respond, the way not to think and to express your thinking through words, because there's nothing wrong. There are going to be times we're going to think wrong. I mean, that's part of Romans chapter 12. We have wrong thoughts in terms of the way we think and the way we process information. The problem comes when we start speaking that instead of thinking it through. Okay, and for different people, it's much more difficult than for other people. And so let's take a look at question five. And this is the next step with this. Realize that all of Job's friends were wrong in their way of thinking. You can go over to chapter 42, verses 7 through 10. We won't right now, but you can read that if you want to. That's where God condemns his friends. You guys were wrong, basically, is what God says. And you need to repent. What does this teach to us if we are to help try to get through difficult times, help others get through difficult times? What does this teach us then? Well, as I've already said, God condemns their thinking there. And there is a right way and a wrong way to help people, and we need to understand how to help people. And we don't want to be like Job says of his friends in chapter 16 and verse 2. You are miserable comforters, all of you. You know, I like that. Job is absolutely correct. But did his friends do everything wrong, or were there some good things that they did?
Well, they did avoid him. You know, okay. A lot of people, when you have problems and conflict, they tend to avoid you by human nature. Yeah. They don't want to deal with that.
Yeah. You know, for me, and I'll be honest with you, the one place I hate to go, and it's not because of what you may think, but the one place I hate, you're not supposed to hate, but the one place I really dislike going to is the funeral home. I really don't like going there. And it's not because somebody has passed. It's because I don't know what to say. You're not going to be able to say anything to comfort. I mean, it's a loss. You're not going to be able to say anything. And I feel so useless in the funeral home. And I really do not like going. I do go there. And over the years, I've learned to practice what Job's friends did. Because that is the way to handle this situation. Kathy?
I think the most comforting thing they did was when they first came and they just sat with him. I remember when my Papa Rainey died, he was a school bus driver, and the superintendent of the schools came. He didn't say, I don't remember a word or that he said a word, but he held my hand with tears in his eyes. And that was the most comfort I received from anyone. He was telling me that he shared my sorrow without ever having to utter a word.
So, go ahead, Todd.
So, can you, maybe you said it and I just didn't.
Probably not. Go ahead.
It, but can you maybe explain a little further about what his friends did?
Yes, right here. Just put it up. So, let's take a look at that. Chapter 2, verses 11 to 13. When it says there, now when Job's three friends heard of all their adversity, of all this adversity that had come upon him, each one came from his own place, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naphathite. For they had made an appointment together to come and mourn with him and to comfort him. And when they raised their eyes from afar and did not recognize him, they lifted their voices and wept. Each one tore his robe and sprinkled dust on his head towards heaven. So they sat down with him on the ground 7 days and seven nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his grief was very great. So let's just kind of break down here. We got 10 minutes. Let's just break down here what Job's friends did right? What did they do right? Because when they opened their mouths and started to express their thinking, they were done. All right, Todd?
I'll go back to your example about the funeral home. They showed up. Sometimes that's all you have to do.
Yep.
And you be in there, whether you sit in there or not, meant so much to that person that was mourning.
Yeah. And it took me a long time to learn. It took me years to learn that was the case. And a lot of times I don't say anything. I just shake their hand and hug them. And that's
tell
it.
Them you love them.
Yeah, that's it. Kevin?
Well, first of all, you know, Job was rich and powerful. And only three came. As much as we want to harp on the bad part, and I know we're going to talk about the 7 day, I'm sure you're going to talk about, but the point is only, they only mentioned three, let's put it that way, maybe more came. But only three out of the however many he probably supported / like was responsible for their livelihood type of thing, only three. So I always found that interesting.
That's a real good point.
As well off as he was, just three. And it could have been just the way God wanted to write it, but still, that's
what's recorded. So that's what we go with. And so, yes, out of all the friends, only three. Okay.
Oh, I was going to say what Tom said.
Okay. All right. Anyone else before I get into what
it's kind of like the prodigal son, too. You know, when you look at the prodigal son, he had money, he had a lot of friends. When he ran out of the money, his friends left. Kind of like, you know, you can see probably the same thing he had with Job.
Yeah.
Things started going bad, people started deserting you.
So what we could say about these three men is that they were true friends.
A lot of times in life, you only have a few
real
true friends.
But they were true friends. Now, then you start looking at their words and you start saying, really, though? They really true friends? Well, I think we can say even with their words and the way they thought, they were true friends because they were doing what? What they thought was
right.
What they were doing, what they thought was right. Now, wrong. They were doing what they thought was right. Let's break down this verse, these verses, and see what's said. About these three men and what they did right. Verse 11 there. Let's kind of break this down. Now when Job's three friends heard of all this adversity that had come upon him, each one came from his own place. Eliphaz, the Temanite, Bildad, the Shuhite, and Zophar, the Naamathite. For they had made an appointment together to come and mourn with him and to comfort him. There's a lot said here in this verse that they did right. What are some of the things? Just look at this one verse. What are some of the things that they did?
They sympathized and wept.
Okay, they sympathized and wept. I'm looking back at the beginning of it. Because this is an indication of a true friend.
They made plans to come together.
They made plans to come together. Were they his neighbors?
No, they came from afar off.
They came from afar off. They weren't his neighbors. They came from afar off. They made plans and came from afar off. Wow. That's saying a lot in my mind. That's saying a lot in my mind. Somebody passes from this congregation and we're going to show up. But let's say somebody you knew passes who lives in another state. Why would you go there? Because those people were what? Really close to you. They meant a lot to you. They came from afar off. They had feelings for Job. They were his true friends. What else is said in here?
They empathized with him.
They empathized with him. They came and mourned with him and to comfort him. They had made a plan of what they were going to do whenever they came. And had they kept that plan? I want you to think about that. Does it anywhere in here say that they came to talk with him and to set him straight? Does it say that? No, they just came and they were going to comfort him and they were going to mourn with him. Yeah.
They were silent?
For seven days. Nate?
Maybe I'm looking too much into it, but it seems to me they didn't even know what had happened to him physically yet.
Yes,
they
verse 12.
They simply came because...
Yep, they had heard terrible things. And notice verse 12, very good, segue into it. When they raised their eyes from far off and did not recognize him, they lifted their voices and wept. And each one tore his robe and sprinkled dust on his head towards heaven. What are they doing in verse 12?
They realize more has happened since they last heard of his landing.
It's an expression of sorrow. They were expressing in physical ways their sorrow. You may not have the words to say to somebody when they lose somebody close, or when they lose someone, or when they're going through difficult times. But if all you do is show up and drop off food, what have you done? Did the same thing they did. You express your sorrow without saying a word. The expressions many times mean more, most of the time, mean more than the words. The expressions mean more than the words. And that's what we see here with these men. And then finally, time's almost out. There's so much more I want to say, but time's almost out. So they sat down with him on the ground 7 days and seven nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his grief was very great. And we've already talked about this a little bit. Todd has mentioned it. What did they do here?
Kevin? Well, the 7 days is I think, the key factor here, because they probably started with one mindset. By the end of the 7 days, they got to a different mindset, because you just had 7 days to sit and think about.
That's a good point.
You probably got, to be honest, you probably were grumpy. You were probably tired. Your attitude has changed from the beginning to the end. And that could be why the responses were like they were, is their own fatigue.
Could be.
And their own problems with, now they're suffering a little bit. And that's
and had they just left after 7 days?
How often do we do that with the challenges we face with other people?
Yeah. And the point I want to make is, I think we're getting ready to leave here in a second, is that you don't need to say anything. You don't need to find the right words. If you don't have the words, don't say anything. Just express your sorrow and your sympathy. And if you do nothing else, and it took me years to learn this, just show up at the funeral house, sit for a little while, and then leave. That would have been perfect had they done that very thing. That would have been perfect. But they thought they had to do more. Their thinking was wrong. They thought they had to do more. They had to say something. If they just stopped here, we would have a lot of good things to say about his friends. Jim?
I was just going to say that it was, and then we say when we go, do we show respect? And that's what that would have done.
Yep, that's exactly what that would have done. I'm sorry I had to rush through that, but I was thankful for David to let me do this and go over this next week. I think it's